Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about evolution and intelligent design. I'm your host, Mike Keyes. Today, again, we continue our conversation with Mike Flannery, Professor Emeritus at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. And we've been talking about his new book with University of Alabama Press called Nature's Prophet, Alfred Russel Wallace and His Evolution from Natural Selection to Natural Theology. At the end of our last conversation, Mike, we were talking about how Wallace departed from Darwin, even though he wrote a book called Darwinism, and even though he was on very good terms with Darwin personally and professionally, ideologically, they went different directions. And that's an interesting story that needs to be told. Now, suppose someone pushes back on this thesis of your book, Mike, and says something like, wait a minute, Darwin went out of his way to promote Wallace. He helped get a pension for him, right? A government pension for 200 pounds a year. Wallace praised Darwin publicly. It sounds like the two are in sync, but you're telling us there's more to the story behind this? What's going on here?
Well, there is more to the story, and you're absolutely right that Darwin, actually, it was shortly after the publication of Wallace's book, Island Life, that Darwin really sang the praises of. I was talking about island ecosystems. And at any rate, at that point, he really launches a one-man campaign, tries to get Hooker and some of his other colleagues involved to get Wallace a 200-pound-a-year government pension, and he is successful. Now, I think the interesting take-home point is that apparently Darwin himself didn't feel that dissent from certain aspects of his theory was tantamount to high treason. I mean, he didn't try to ruin Wallace's career for any kind of heresy. Apparently, for Darwin, there was room for disagreement, and, you know, I wish we saw more of that today, but...
Oh my goodness, we see the opposite of this today. What's going on? I mean, if you're going to be true to Darwin as a Darwinist today, shouldn't you be more encouraging open discussion and tolerating dissent?
Sure. You know, free marketplace of ideas. Let's put it all out on the table and let's give everyone an equal place at the table in the discussion. But we see scant little of that today. Apparently, Darwin was always, always appreciative of Wallace, Wallace's famous Kernate letter, which laid out his idea of natural selection that he sent to him from the island of Kernate in maritime Southeast Asia, halfway around the world. When Wallace found out that they took his letter and basically read it before the Linnaean Society, along with some of Darwin's early writings, and this is, of course, before the publication of Origin of Species, Wallace is elated, and so is Darwin. Darwin always appreciated Wallace's reaction to that. And while they were distant in the sense that they knew that they were not completely of the same mind on everything that related to evolution and evolutionary theory, they did remain friends through life, including Darwin's death on April 19th, 1882, and who was one of the pallbearers? Alfred Russel Wallace.
And occasionally, Mike, we do see this kind of exchange today. Michael Ruse is an example of someone who's interacted quite generously with proponents of intelligent design, but unfortunately, that's the rare exception. And of course, back in Darwin's time, you also had Huxley, who was known as Darwin's bulldog. Now, why bulldog?
He was supposed to be this tenacious campaigner for science, this tenacious proponent of getting rid of all these theological superstitions out there. And he was going to pave the way for a new age of scientific discovery. And in some ways, I have to say, he did. I mean, the development of biology from that point on, the discovery of genetic theory, Mendelian theory, and so forth and so on, did pave the way for understanding certain aspects of the biological world. That's not to say that there weren't severe problems in developing all aspects or understandings of that. So I guess my issue with Huxley was, yes, you can be a bulldog, but don't insist that the age you're bringing us into is the only possible way of interpreting. And right. Don't along the way create a band of like-minded individuals who seek primarily to exclude others from the conversation, because that strikes me not only as against the spirit of science, but really against the spirit of academic inquiry.
And Mike, I was just thinking, this open-ended, congenial exchange of scholars is hopefully happening not just among scientists, but also among historians of science like you and me. So, for example, when you participated in the second international conference on Alfred Russel Wallace held in Malaysia, you read a paper about Wallace, which had in its title Nature's Prophet, From Natural Selection to Natural Theology. It sounds like that was a building block toward your book. What kind of response did you get from other professionals, that is, other historians of science and medicine who were present?
Well, first of all, I was very appreciative to be able to come to that conference, and I was very appreciative that my paper was accepted and read, and the organizers of that conference were very gracious, and really it was a wonderful opportunity to have scholars from all over the world really convene in Kuching, which used to be called Sarawak, Borneo, which was where Wallace had spent about a year looking at beetle species and so forth. So it was kind of exciting to come back to Wallace's old stomping grounds to give this commemorative paper along with many other excellent papers that were delivered. Now, the reaction to my paper, now that was interesting. And I would say that there were probably three general reactions to my paper. The first reaction was, yes, a very good paper, and it was an interesting take on Wallace that really filled in a productive way some of the aspects of Wallace that weren't otherwise covered in this particular conference. So it was a welcome contribution to the entire set of papers that were given, and they were appreciative.
Mm-hmm.
The second group were people who were even more appreciative in the sense that they were unaware of Wallace's natural theology. They were unaware of this particular aspect of Wallace. Yes, they knew he was famous. He was famous in the Malay Archipelago. He had done all this scientific work in the Amazon River Basin. He had discovered these tens of thousands of different animals, everything from beetles to butterflies. They knew that aspect of him, but what they didn't know is this other natural theology side. And so it was sort of eye-opening for them. And then the third group, and this largely came from the European contingent. Some Brits were there, some people from Germany and Holland, I think, I'm not entirely sure, but there was a European contingent there.
Right.
This made them uncomfortable. It's the only way to say it. They were not comfortable with this aspect of Wallace. Wallace the scientist, fine. Wallace the natural theologian, they were fidgeting in their seats.
And tell us what you mean by natural theology, and why would that make some of your audience so fidgety?
Well, the idea that when we look at nature, we can see the process of design. We can see, I mean, Wallace didn't express it this way, but in a religious believer's way of looking at it, we can see the hand of God, that we can see teleology or purpose in nature, that when we look at nature, we are looking at much more than just blind laws. And so that's what they were uncomfortable about. Now, those were the three, you know, sort of reactions. So I got applause when I was done. There was some murmuring.
Yeah.
But I got applause. Now, here's the interesting part. When I was done, the next morning, I got up, and I cannot tell you a number of, because this was also sponsored by University of Malaysia, there were a number of students who came up to me and they said, Professor Flannery. And they said, we've never heard anything like this before. And I said, well, Wallace is a complex man and these are complex topics, but never assume that the simplest answer is always the right one. And Wallace did, if you'll notice in my paper, point out that the problem he saw with applying a strictly Darwinian scenario to nature was coming from the problems, the scientific problems that Wallace had laid out himself, particularly the problem of utility. So just because we can see natural selection in operation, just because we can see the laws of nature working, that doesn't mean that that's all that's happening. And they sat there in rapt attention. I don't know how long I was there. But I walked away. I even told my wife. I said, if there was anything that made this entire trip worthwhile, it was this early morning interaction I had with these students who were absolutely by learning a story about Wallace they simply were unfamiliar with.
That's a great story, Mike. And I would want also to point out that your paper was not only very engaging for these students and for the other segments of the audience that you described, but the paper was published, right?
Yes.
So what does that tell us about, look, if it's published, that means obviously was recognized by other scholars as being legitimate because otherwise it wouldn't have been published.
Well, there's an interesting side note to that as well. I'm not going to name names here, but one of the individuals, a British individual, who had some questions about my handling of Darwin. They didn't actually disagree with my handling of Wallace, but they didn't quite go along with some of the things I characterized Darwinian evolution as. At any rate, they had made some revisions to their paper. And before it went to press, the editors came to me to peer review their revised version. So that told me that at least the editors who were putting together this published piece thought highly enough of my ability to peer review one of the other papers that had been revised before taking it to publication. So
right.
It all worked out.
That's wonderful. Yes, and I've had similar interactions with colleagues. I'm in the myth-busting business in the history of science and participated in conferences and books that have one particular volume that's come out of such a conference. And yeah, it's a great opportunity for a diverse set of scholars to interact with each other. And that's exciting to kind of recreate the excitement of Darwin and Wallace interacting. Even though they parted ways on certain fundamental issues, they still enjoyed a collegial relationship. And we hope that to encourage that sort of thing in the future, as proponents of intelligent design interact with others who think otherwise.
So I think you agree with me that we need a lot more of this in the field, a lot more interaction, a lot more open discussion, and a lot more places at the table.
All right. Well, thanks, Mike, for this third conversation about your book. I encourage everyone out there to check out this new book at Amazon. This is Michael Flannery's book, Nature's Prophet, Alfred Russel Wallace and His Evolution from Natural Selection to Natural Theology, University of Alabama Press. Thanks for joining us. And Mike, thank you for this third interview about your new book. I'm so excited about your new book.
Thank you very much, Mike. I appreciate it.
So this is Mike Keyes. Thanks for joining us at ID the Future.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.